Hark, the bardic paladin, who sings and plays again. He tells the tales of glory, and weaves a magic story. He'll join you at your table, and ask you to share a fable. Heroes of humble origin, villains who must be fought again. No matter their skill or prowess, the people in life are countless. So we pray you heed our request. Enjoy this tale of sidekicks and sidequests.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to round two Electric Boogaloo of Patron Pub Night here at the Levitating Platter.
Woo-hoo. Ow, ow.
And we're joined by Goblin Katie, Katie Downey, the queen of the Patreon, if I might say.
Thank you, thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to support such a wonderful, wonderful production.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, so... originally, when we, you know, came up with this idea, we were going to do this all for the 100th episode. And, you know, it was just going to be a free-for-all and figured, you know, we try and do these every once in a while. But now that Miss Goblin Katie has finished up with her busy schedule of various live stream special productions and work and whatever else, now we got the three amigos together, as it were.
Hooray! It's been a little busy, a little hectic lately. But it's fun, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah. So, how's it been, Anson?
Oh, been pretty good. I was looking at our little show notes document here, and looks like Katie went and filled in her answers or questions to some of the things that we talked about last time. So
sure.
Maybe this time I can take a little medium back seat, or a middle seat, if you will, and... Katie can fill in for kind of the ideas we were talking about last time. As a recap, it was, you know, favorite NPCs, what works, new things to try, and then us, me grilling Kurt. So I see Katie has some good interview questions there, so I'm looking forward to hearing some of those. But yeah, things are good for me too. Just in kind of a job transition myself, so also been a little hectic, but I'm glad I could take the time to meet with you all today.
Yeah. And I know, like we alluded to in the bonus episode, you know, on Anson and I's old podcast, we used to do the segment of what are you drinking? So I know tonight I have my glass here of, okay. Yeah, we got some stuff ready to go tonight. So I happen to have a glass of the Balcones Brimstone Fire Whiskey, and I mixed it with some Mr. T's Sweet and Sour. And that's what I'm drinking tonight.
I think we talked about that last time because you had Balcones and we were talking about it's like a Waco thing or Austin.
Balcones is based in Waco, Texas.
Okay, yeah, nice.
I'm surprised you in the Baptist Waco town and there at Baylor didn't realize that this existed there.
I was not.
You're slacking, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to college in Waco, so that's spent some years there. Yeah.
Good time.
I'm drinking some Jameson Irish whiskey myself with a little bit of water to open it up a little bit. I know a lot of people think I'm a heathen for it, but frankly, I think it tastes better with a little bit of water, so meh.
Mm-hmm.
I have my classic Johnny Walker Black, so still
nice.
In the bottle that I bought last year, so not a big rush here.
Still in the snifter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because you don't want
but to that's awesome. Drink. Like, I'm drinking out of a Starbucks tumbler, so. Because I am that girl.
Mm. Yeah, so now that the opportunity is here and presents itself, just kind of here at the top of our whatever this conversation decides to be tonight, it's just kind of cool having, like, you know, the very first Patreon supporter here, and then like my newest Patreon supporter here, so it's just kind of cool.
Yay!
And then my other two Patreon supporters happen to be on the other side of the door of the room of where I'm recording.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep,
so you should bring them in. We'll all hang out and drink.
Yep. But So it's just awesome to have the two of you here, and maybe the only questions I get to ask tonight before I let y'all kind of take the driver's seat tonight, but just kind of curious, you know, what was your inspiration or your moment that you were like, you know what, I'll go ahead and take a chance on this thing and decide to lend my support to this little harebrained idea?
For me, I think I had posted saying, hey, I'm open to doing podcasts, and you reached out. And you told me about the theme of the podcast and what you were trying to achieve with it. And I went and listened to an episode or two and was like, this is really cool. This is unique. I've not seen another podcast that does something like this. And I decided then and there, when I was on the show, actually, you mentioned the Patreon. And I was like, oh, wait, I can support this. Awesome. So I immediately went and supported it because I believe in the uniqueness and the fun of this podcast.
Oh, that warms my heart very much. And I haven't even had
it. But you weren't super nice, so.
Awesome. I mean, there's probably a biased answer from Anson, you know, being longtime friends and all that. But
yeah, so I've known Kurt since high school?
Junior high.
Yeah. So we go way back, and I spend a lot of time at his house over there down in Houston. So be sure to say hi to your parents for me.
I will, yeah.
Kurt and I also did a show together for a year and a half, right? 2 years,
something like that. We started it in 2018, and then it finally shuttered like right at the beginning of 2020. Technically, maybe right at the end of 2019, but it was going into 2020. And then being like, oh, I have this new idea for a podcast. We're going into 2020, a new year. Nothing could go wrong. And then everything changed.
Oh, so it's your fault.
I guess, yeah. Blank tape going off the air caused the apocalypse. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, way to go. Way to go, guys.
Oops. So, yeah,
what was the previous podcast?
It's like a variety show. The idea was for us to just kind of stay in touch because Kurt's in Dallas and I am still in Houston here. So
yeah.
We wanted to like stay in touch. And I think it was every 2 weeks, right? We got together and just chatted for an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, we were modeling off some of our other podcast heroes like Destin Sandlin and Matt Whitman, who do the No Dumb Questions podcast. You know, they're both big YouTubers. And then the influence that Anson had, I believe you said it was Roderick on the Line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were kind of looking at those shows and modeling our podcast idea of just like, well, we're two best friends, we're two nerds, and we don't have an internet presence, but we'll just try this medium and see how it works. And, you know, it ended up becoming this new passion. It certainly for me, and, you know, and I think while we had the time and energy to produce that show, I think it was a very fun thing for Anson to do as well.
Yes, it was. Definitely.
That's awesome. Is it still available? Like, could I go back and listen to it?
For sure, yeah. You can find it all on YouTube if you just search for Blank Tape Show. And it kind of
blank like
a cassette tape is the logo.
And there's a link here.
And there's the link graciously provided. Oh. And Anson, yeah, has basically archived it on his personal website to give you like a glimpse of some of the stats and and stuff like that. Some of our
That is awesome. I assume you'll post that link on the episode description, because I'm fairly certain I'm not the only person who's going to go back and listen to this.
Oh yeah, sure. We can definitely do that for sure.
Excellent.
Yeah, I know. We did a couple of guest episodes, and that I think was kind of the catalyst for me being like, I like the variety, like obviously the same basic rough consistency between the two of us, but it was always special to me to always just get to bring someone on. So we have a mutual friend of ours named Heather Campbell, and she's an artist at Valve. And so her to come on and explain her whole beginnings art career on, you know, ye old tumblers and DeviantArt and stuff like that, to now, you know, she's on staff with Valve and she manages, you know, the Dota 2 stuff and does the TF2 comics and all this. And then
that's dope.
We had our other buddy, Pete Sosa, who's the drummer for a number of different punk bands, including CJ Ramon, and I think he said he did some stuff with the Street Dogs and a couple of other bands and stuff like that. And so he was a kid that was like in the band. You know, we were all in the music department, and we were like, oh yeah, Pete Sosa is in percussion. He plays in some bands and stuff like that around school. It turns out he stuck with it, and now he's like big in the punk world. So.
Oh, good for him. That's all. That's a good world to be in, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he also got his picture taken with Fred Armisen, fellow famous drummer as well. So.
Nice. Very nice. He is somebody that I am curious. Like, I would love to meet him because he seems so, like, quirky, but at the same time professional and measured. And I'm like, I want to pick your brain and learn how it works.
Also, and he's got the chops for music too, because he can play the drums and he can play the guitars.
Oh, that's, yeah, he drums for, oh God, who is it? It's not Seth Meyers. It's, is it? I think it's Seth Meyers.
It is Seth Meyers.
It is Seth Meyers, yeah. Yeah.
So Fred Armisen has a steady gig on the Late Show with Seth Meyers?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. He's his drummer. It's his band that does the music.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a hilarious show, by the way. I watch the clips on YouTube for News of the Week and Closer Look. And then they've done, and I love this. I think this is so much fun. They've done day drinking specials with different celebrities. Mm. Like there's one with, what's her name? Bad Guy. Ocean Eyes. Yes, one with Billie Eilish and something else. Oh, no, it wasn't Billie Eilish. What was that? I don't remember. Anyways, he did one with his mom. They're really funny. So I highly recommend the day drinking things they did.
Okay.
I'm feeling like I'm focusing too much on alcohol.
We're at a fictional pub where the alcohol flows, so.
That is fair, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the magnificent mansion that is the Levitating Placard. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's the best place to drink.
Yeah, yeah. Randolph would probably say it is, in fact, the best place to drink.
Mm-hmm. It's a fact. It's known. It's just science.
Just science. Yeah. That's what wizards say. It's just science.
It's just science.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll leave it to you, you both, so wherever you want to take this show, if you want to, you know, go through the questions that Anson had originally formulated for the 100th episode, or you just want to take this all in a different direction, I'm down. You know, you can pick my brain as the Patreon crew and stuff like that.
All right, I think we can do that. Do you want to alternate questions?
Let's see. Sure. You're,
Oh, I was just saying, I had a lot because I had a good brain moment and it just started turning. My ADHD meds were doing great. And so I put a lot in there.
That looks great. Thanks for doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'll start.
Sure.
Kurt, why did you decide to start this show?
Oh, great question. So as alluded to earlier, Anson and I were doing our podcast, and Anson was saying like, man, I'm getting more responsibilities at work at this job that I'm at. And, you know, it's too much for me to upkeep. So I think we better bow out on a high note rather than this thing crashing and burning.
So oh, that's smart.
So then we did we did our final episode, and, you know, it was a lot to take in and process, but it was like that was the mature, responsible thing for us to do. So then I was like, okay, thinking back on this Reddit post or this random meme I saw come across where it was like, everybody is an NPC in someone else's life. And so being someone of faith and being someone who loves D&D and loved doing our interview episodes and getting to even do our dedicated Dungeons and Dragons episode from our podcast, I was like, I think this would be a really cool thing to do. I've never heard of anyone, you know, taking the time to humanize their guests so it's not just all formalities of like, well, I'm the so-and-so and I do this and I'm the big shot and I'm the big whiz and the big cheese and then, you know, me and it's so cool. And it was just like, well, let's just be real and focus on the other, that kind of focus, or it's not so self-centered, it's selfless of a focus. So I just would, you know, bring a guest on, and then, you know, then we'd make up a character, and it would be a character that you could stick in your game, and, oh, we should give them a side quest. And then I'm pretty sure Anson came up with the idea of like, oh, you need something to tie it together. So what if you did like a role play scenario? And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, like a random encounter. And so then you would, you know, get an idea of how to contextualize the character, and then you wrap it up, and then that would be an episode. And I didn't know if it would necessarily work, if it would just release to the ether and be crickets and no one would download it and care. But I guess 4 seasons later, and after this most recent episode that I did with Super Geek Mike Christensen, the download numbers have been ticking a little more steadily. So I think if we haven't already crossed 9,000, then we're probably soon to do so.
With yay! Congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, 8972. So we're at 8,972 downloads as of the moment of this recording.
Okay, so you need 28 more.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go refresh my podcast player while we're talking.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a little tweeting and blue skying in just a few minutes.
That's right. Still have an invite for that. I think I joined the waiting list months ago at this point and haven't gotten anything.
Do you need one?
I know Nat One Dan Munoz put something on. So before we started recording, I threw a little gif in the tweets, X, I don't know what they're calling it now, and just said like, oh, I'll take one if you're giving them out, I suppose.
Yeah. If you don't get one from him, let me know and I'll give you one of mine.
Oh, okay, cool. We'll do.
Yeah. And same, Anson, if I've got two, so if y'all need one, I'll hook you up.
Thanks. Yeah, I haven't actually looked into it at all. I've been using Mastodon recently. Kind of the other software developer kind of centric one, kind of seems like. So that's been fun.
The nice thing about Blue Sky is it's early Twitter, basically. But the things I don't like is you don't have direct messaging and you don't have GIFs. And I am on the tail end of Gen X, and so I like using GIFs to communicate with people, as the millennials do.
Yes.
So it hurts me to not be able to carry out a conversation with somebody just sending GIFs back and forth.
Well, Andrew Strother helped point me to the GIF keyboard app, and so I downloaded that. And because I got Threads, because only as of March we've been maintaining an Instagram account. So then over 4th of July holidays, this Threads thing dropped. And I was like, well, if people are going to go there, I guess I have to.
Yeah.
Another social media thing I have to open for the podcast. But Threads has been like pretty good and gotten some traction there and stuff. But yeah, that's how I was able to figure out like, oh, if I use this GIF keyboard thing, then I can just copy paste it.
Yeah.
Until they get their own GIF integration.
Yeah, you know what? You keep calling it GIF, so I'm going to revoke the offer of an invitation because you are the devil.
Graphics. Yeah, I get. Yeah, I know. Yeah, graphics.
No, I'm just somebody who likes to take ridiculous stands. I'm kidding. I'll still give you the invite, but I like to take ridiculous stands. Mm-hmm. And at one point, we have a sponsor on one of the shows I do, and the word Eldritch is in their name. I had always pronounced the word as Eldrick. And so it had been kind of a joke. Yeah. It had been kind of a joke during our sponsor shout outs. And then finally one day, one of the DMs pulled me to the side. He was like, this is a sponsor. You cannot keep mispronouncing the name. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. That's a good point. All right. I'll drop it. Mm-hmm. So that was the hill I died on because I needed to. Love you, Eldritch Foundry.
Yep. I'm sure there's some actual play out there doing Spelljammer, and they come across the GIF hippo people, and they're like, now, do you pronounce it GIF or do you pronounce it JIF?
I love that.
Somewhere out there.
Yes. I'm going to incorporate that into a game at some point. That's good. I like that.
That's only our joke that we can make. Listen, you're... You're a plasmoid. You're not allowed to make that kind of a joke.
You don't get to say that. You don't get to say that.
And I said, oh, I didn't realize that was such a touchy subject. I'm sorry. I'll refrain from it.
This is a teaching moment. This is a learning moment.
Right. So yeah, to bring it back around. Yeah. So that's kind of what got the podcast to start was just like, okay, well, I've got some expertise in this realm and I think it'd be cool to do this new format that I hadn't tried. And, you know, I locked all the socials down by January, and February and March had started getting my first couple of recordings. And then by April, we had gone into work from home and lockdowns and all that stuff, and was able to get that first interview on Andrew Strother's Role for Persuasion podcast. And I remember at that time being like, oh, you know, almost to 500 downloads by the time I was interviewed. Oh, I think probably sometime in that summer. I was like, okay, well, then, you know, this thing may actually have a chance because of the, you know, Blank Tape was such like a, like Anson said, a variety show. So the scope was so wide that it was like throwing spaghetti on the side of a barn, just trying to see what would stick. And yeah, then this, like, it's just D&D and we're just interviewing and then we're making up characters and side quests and that's it. That's all you're going to get from this show. So it was kind of like, okay, resource podcast that I can tune into, listen for a little bit, or just listen to the parts I want and take the stuff I want for my game. Then
yeah.
Having to focus, the lack of a focus on our show was definitely a detriment, I think. It was fun, but like, it was hard to think about, like, if somebody didn't know us, like, would they really want to listen to just guys like ramble about anything, you know? And
the High School Musical we did, or the our synopsis breakdown of the entire Marvel movie history out there that exists.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of strange overlapping.
Yeah, and we do these like involved, you know, news tidbits of the week. And so then like that encompassed a bunch of different influences and focuses of like, you know, I'd be like, have you heard this crazy thing that's going on in the Catholic Church world? And then Anson would be like, so the next Apple convention thing is about to drop and they have the new Apple Watches coming out.
And yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. If you think about it, I was also raised Catholic, and if you think about it, there is kind of a correlation between the Catholic Church and Apple in that you have to keep returning to stay up to date and keep things refreshed. So it's got a constant draw for the consumers.
Yeah, true. Yeah, one way to look at it. And
I'm stretching, I know.
Yeah.
Y'all reminded me of something, speaking about the beginning of this show. I think, Kurt, didn't you used to have a time limit goal? You were, like, trying to get it in 30 minutes or less or whatever.
Yeah.
And then have, like, gone by the wayside. I think for the better. Like, there have been shows that are, like, an hour, and I'm like, man, this is, like, I'm super in this little world that they've made. And it's, like, you know, so I'm glad that you've let the show evolve and kind of be what it needs to be and not have to stick to the original idea, like, no matter what.
Right. Like, I know for Katie's episode, I do remember I had to cut out some chunks just because it was like, it was not a relevant conversation that was going to help propel the episode forward. And so in the interest of time there, I was like, okay, you know, or this is me going off on some tangent that's not helpful. So I'll just cut this bit out. I try and always err on that side more.
It was the thing that I was impressed with when I listened to the episode was how seamless it was. Like, you couldn't tell that there were chunks missing unless you had been there. And that impressed me a lot because there are a lot of producers who, or editors who can't get that seamless transition when they remove content. And you did a really good job of that.
Oh, thanks. So those are chops developed when we did Blank Tape. And there was a point in the show where it was Anson that was doing all the editing initially. So if you listen, you go through those YouTube versions of our episodes and you know, the first half of the life of the podcast was pretty much just Anson editing. And then we made the switch. It was right when, because the joke was, because Infinity War had come out and it was the snap. And it was like we all came back and it was like, oh, we've returned after our big extended break. And now it's like Kurt's responsibility now to edit the podcast. And so then that's where I started getting my chops developed on how I like editing. And you'll hear it in the beginning episodes of Sidekicks and Sidequests, where I was a lot more nitpicky on breathing and filler words and lip smacking and all these things that kind of drive me nuts when I listen to podcasts. And then, you know, as time has gone on, I'm like a little more forgiving because I'll listen to award-winning or just, you know, super recognized out there podcasts in the D&D sphere. And they're making the same kinds of things going on that would normally bug me if I was having to edit it. But because it's them, it's like, oh, you know, their coolness or their gravitas or whatever, they just kind of roll through it and it's no big deal. Mm.
That was, I never realized that like mouth sounds could be triggering for folks. And it wasn't until I ran a game over Zoom that one of my friends started like cringing and twitching. And I was like, oh, let me back off that. Doesn't look like a happy reaction. And that was because I love inaudible or unintelligible mouth noises. Like, that's my ASMR thing. I love that. So it never occurred to me that it could be, like, disturbing to folks. So.
Yeah, just trying to make a good, plausible, and enjoyable listening experience. If, you know, the idea of the show is that, you know, you listen to the first half for a fun interview, a personal interview with the guest that's being interviewed, and then when we're actually in the character-making segment and the random encounters section, that it feels like, okay, we're engaged with the story and the creation of the character to then go into the role play scenario, that it's not taking you out of it because there's just too much nonsense going on or just too many exit points because, like, oh, some noise made you think, like, oh, did I leave the stove on or something like that? When
did I leave the gas on? Of course I didn't. I'm a squirrel. Sorry.
I don't know if this has covered multiple questions or not, but yeah.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, if you ever need more Patreon bonus ideas and you have, like, episodes where it's, like, there's an unedited version that's, like, full of stuff that didn't make it into the final, you could always release that as, like, a bonus. Like, oh, the unedited
That's actually pretty clever. Yeah.
One of the shows that I listen to does that for members. They call it the bootleg feed. And it's, like, you know, rather than waiting for the host to edit it, the host just, like, releases that, like, immediately. He just, like, okay, here's the audio, boop, there you go, and, like, that's it, and it has all the swears and stuff. So if you want people to hear, you know, your guests swearing,
my first thought was B-side, just because of the cassette thing that y'all were doing.
Well, I think that's what we called we called it the nice. Well, did we call it the B-side? We had like Hi-Fi Hero and
tracks.
We called them hidden tracks is what they were called. If they were like a Patreon bonus episode, we called them hidden tracks, and then you could be like a Hi-Fi Hero or audio aficionado, or you know, we had different creative names for them, and the only people that supported us, you know, surprise surprise, were my mom and dad.
But, like, that's, I feel like that's how a lot of people, not everybody, unfortunately, but a lot of people get their initial support from their family. And it's family and friends. And that's the encouragement that kind of keeps us going. Yeah. Do you want to ask a question, Anson?
Yes, I'll fire away. What would you say, you know, we always like to hear that you say you're the best unofficial Dungeons and Dragons podcast in your humbly biased opinion. What would you say sets you apart from the other tabletop role-playing game podcasts that are out there?
Well, one, the big thing, and I remember this was, you know, a compliment paid to me by Andrew Strother when I was on his show for the first time. He was like, you know, 90% of the podcasts out there, they're all actual play stuff. And then it's like, then you get to the other 10% of podcasts, and of those, probably like 8% of them are like talking about news in the hobby or rules or mechanics and stuff like that. Then there's the 2% of the podcast, and it's like you, me, and James Intricasso when James Intricasso was doing his podcast.
So. I love James so much.
Well, I have yet to get him on the podcast. It's something on the growing to-do list of guests to try and get on the show. But
I'll recommend you.
Okay. I just figure he's busy, you know, kind of like with all the multitude of projects going on at MCG.
He is a very busy person, but I know he enjoys making time for interacting with folks, and he loves talking games, so I have a feeling that he'll be down.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the big kahuna, which I remember was the question Anson last asked on episode 100 was, oh, who's someone from the D&D space you would get? And I'd be like, yeah. Matt Colville. If I could land a Matt Colville episode, that would be amazing. I'm sure he would be like, you know, oh, you know, thanks for the offer, but, you know, there's probably someone else who needs to be on the show and not me. But still, that would be super cool, and I'd have to resist every urge to not just be a huge nerd that just be like, oh, Mr. Colville, I can't breathe, you're on the podcast.
So I'll confess something. The first, this is so dorky. The first I met, oh God, no, never mind, I'm blanking.
We'll come back to that story later in the end.
Chris Perkins. That's the name.
Oh.
I met Chris Perkins backstage at a show I was doing at Gamehole Con, and I didn't know who he was because I had just gotten back into D&D. I had no clue who anybody was, and I met him. I was just like, oh yeah, hey. I was like, oh. I found out later. I was like, oh, probably should have been a little more respectful, but okay.
Yeah. Well, I remember him from the watching on YouTube the Acquisitions Incorporated games that he would do, and the Robot Chicken, and some of those early games that recently Mike Christensen, Super Geek Mike, and I got to geek out about on his episode.
Yeah, yeah. He's just the nicest guy. Like, super nice guy. Oh, you were saying the thing that sets you apart. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, so I think, you know, just the, and also the fact of, like, you know, the tagline of the show being like, we put the humans back into humanity, and we're just trying to make interesting and fun NPCs. I mean, I know there's, you know, like previous guests of the show, Lauren Walsh has an awesome Patreon where she designs all these NPCs that you can, you know, with full art spreads and write-ups and VTT tokens and all this other stuff. And so I know that there's great creators and artists out there that do that, but it's like, for, you know, for the Joe Schmoes out there that are like, oh, well, I mean, I got to run D&D for my kids or my family or my group of friends, and, you know, oh, I can't, I'm too stressed to think of a character to stick into my game. And then it's like, well, here's something for free. You know, you can take it as it is, or, you know, tweak it so it makes more sense for your game, but then just, here's a free resource. I'm not going to make you pay money. It's not going to be hiding behind a paywall. It's just like, you know, here, it, just take it as it is. You know, I'm just trying to put something in your hands that you could use tonight. So, you know, yeah, maybe like the longest episode of mine might be like an hour and 20. And admittedly, I'm way behind on show notes and getting those all out. But conceivably, you could listen to a podcast episode, jot some notes if I don't already have them down, and then be like, great, I already know how I'm going to use this character tonight in my game.
Yeah, yeah. What would you say has been the hardest thing about making a podcast?
The hardest thing is probably, okay, so two things. So first, I would say is the editing. Like, just being like a solo dude, you know, editing a podcast takes time. And like, if you're in the right headspace to like, I have to sit in front of a computer and listen to this thing, you know, 500 times, you know, in snippets across as I listen to it and make sure it sounds good. And can I be a little more forgiving of myself and just let things go? And then probably just the social media game. Like, and I know, I think Katie and I both have had, you know, conversations and exchanges of like, you know, do you really have to commit to the grind and being out there? I don't have a social media team or marketing strategy. It's just like, when I've got something to say, I guess I'll say it and, you know, just let it travel through the grapevine organically rather than pumping a bunch of money into some mighty algorithm fueled by money and greed and to get people to discover the podcast.
I've done promoted posts on the Book of Faces a couple times, and I have discovered that you get a lot of interaction. It doesn't result in a lot of traction, if that makes sense. So it's dicey doing promoted stuff. I have found it's much better to just put it out there yourself and be honest, be true to who you are and what you're doing, and folks will start catching on.
Yeah, it's been slow going. There's a bobby pin right here for some reason, but thinking of the metaphor of like trading up with the paperclip thing. So it's like, you know, as I get more guests and, you know, build up the repertoire of episodes and stuff like that, you know, and I can, you know, so people who may be bigger fishes, I can be like, well, I've had all these other people on my show. Are you cool with being on the same podcast that these other people have been on? And then they might listen to a couple of episodes and they say, you know what, actually, yes, I will be on your show. And so then that's what I think is, you know, helped to slowly, you know, give that confidence and that traction for, you know, maybe more people to take a chance and listen. And so, yeah. You know, I think having the Super Geek Mike bump at the end of one of his most recent Pathfinder videos and him talking about like how he really loved making the character, and this character is probably going to end up in my next Ravenloft game. And so, yeah, hopefully that gets, you know, more people to listen to that episode, but also just other episodes that exist.
Yeah.
Right on. So if you are trying to get people on, how do you typically approach a potential guest? You know, do you just have people in mind, like you're saying, or do you actively try to recruit or look for people? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a whole mixture of strategies. Like if they're like, I can tell you, I emailed the official email that's on Brendan Lee Mulligan's website and typed up a very personal message and tried to drop the fact that, hey, you were on Andrew Strother's podcast, and did you know that Jasper's Game Day one-shot you did with Quando the Orc, that character was made on my podcast? So in a way, you've already sort of kind of experienced my podcast, so wouldn't it just be cool if you were already on my podcast thing? But I said it in a very nice, professional way. So there's that, like trying to reach out through professional contact means, but then, you know, if they're just someone on social media, I might try and reach out that way. Whether it's like a Facebook Messenger or it's, I guess now Instagram DMs, or the other day, I think she goes by Scarlet64 on Instagram or something. She has an X in the Scarlet or whatever. But I saw when I was pulling up Twitch, and then I saw like, oh, hey, recommended channel. And I was like, oh, I didn't know she had a Twitch. And so I said, okay, I'll follow her Twitch stream. And then I pull up the video and she's like, oh, hey, Kurt Plays Bass, welcome to the stream. And I was like, oh, hey, I follow you on Instagram and I do this D&D podcast. And so she was like, oh, cool, what's it about? And I explained it and she's like, oh, cool, I'd be down to be on the podcast. And so I've sent her an Instagram message, and so we'll see if anything comes beyond that. So I guess it's a mixture of strategies of just trying to pop on people's Twitch streams and go through their website channels and mm-hmm. email people and stuff, trying to work with Christina Ariel, because I know she was a guest on Andrew Rother's podcast, but obviously she's kind of busy with all the Star Wars stuff, so I don't know if she'll get back to me in a timely manner or not.
Her Captain Marvel cosplay is my favorite Captain Marvel cosplay I have ever seen. She looks amazing.
Well, she did the BuzzFeed video, right? And then she also did the Misty Knight, the Luke Cage character. With the robot prosthetic arm.
Oh, yeah.
She twirled the gun. And...
Mm-hmm. I will say that one thing, people assume that folks are too big or too busy to do stuff. Don't make that assumption. 99% of the folks I know are not as busy as you think they are. So the worst thing is they say no. Just ask.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll let you two know and whenever this bonus episode is scheduled to go out, but I just confirmed with Adam Bradford, so he and I should be recording here.
Adam is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being, and tell him I said hi and hugs. Love him.
I think it also helps that I've had a number of demiplane people already on the podcast.
Yeah. He actually... the final episode of Silver and Steel, I popped in just in time for him, his character, Briv, to basically DM for all the characters in game. And God bless him. I love him. The adventure he ran was a goblin named Katie came and found all of them and invited them to a party. And I was just like, I love him to pieces. He's amazing. Get him to sing. Make him sing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll try and remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take notes. Yeah.
Yes. Make him. He has a surprisingly good singing voice.
I have a surprisingly good singing voice. I only went to 5 years of undergrad to do it, but yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, sing us a bar.
What do you want to hear?
Your favorite song.
Something from Guys and Dolls. Or whatever, one of the many, many musicals you've done.
Oh, great. Now I'm having to think. I mean, what is it? We did Guys and Dolls freshman year of high school. Then we did Grease, and then we did Oklahoma, and then we did Once Upon a Mattress.
Sing Oklahoma. The Oklahoma.
Okay. All right. Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Oh my god! You can sing! Holy crap!
Yeah.
Sounds like
that's why I'm called the Bardic Paladin.
Holy crap.
There we go.
Yeah, that's the namesake of why I'm the Bardic Paladin, is because, like, I did, you know, like, formal training for singing, and then I joined the Knights of Columbus, and I'm a third degree Knight of Columbus. I was literally knighted, so that's why I'm a Bardic Paladin.
Holy, that is so cool! I'm learning so much about you. This is fabulous.
And so now it's natural that at some point I'll have to play some kind of multi-class bard paladin and then be like, the bardic paladin. You know, so he acts very knightly, but then he goes around and he'll sing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love it. I'm down. So, okay. You've got some experience at this point. You've done multiple podcasts. You seem to know what you're doing, judging by the quality of your podcasts. Knowing what you know now, if you could go back to when you were first starting out in this medium, what would you tell yourself? What one thing do you think would help you the most to have known early on?
Probably something along the lines of, like, believe in yourself and trust the process. Just like the slow dedication, you know, the late nights, sometimes the unnecessary late nights because of your own hubris, but, you know, just taking the time, putting in the work, and then believing in yourself and being your own biggest cheerleader, even if, like, Anson and I would talk about, like, even if we were just screaming into the ether talking about nonsense, at least we still believed, you know, well, mom and dad would listen, and then, you know, that would be good enough for us. And if that's all that ever listened, then okay, well, at least we did something and we tried. And we made art and we put stuff out there into the world that wasn't there before.
If I can dovetail on that to our wonderful listeners, if you can't be the artist itself in that moment, being a patron of the arts is a wonderful alternative. Letting people create beautiful things that enrich the culture surrounding you and supporting the things that you enjoy and believe in is actually a wonderful way to be involved. So head over to the Patreon and sign up. I'm just saying.
There you go.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. Let's see, whose turn is it now to ask a question?
Anson?
Yeah, that's me. We're doing some highlighting here as we go. So I guess kind of related to that, if you could go back and, like, redo something, and I know it's kind of like you're kind of, like, locked into this format going forward, you know, but if there's something that you could kind of, like, snap your fingers and change something about all the episodes you've done, what would you, like, retroactively, like, redo across the board?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, being inspired by some of these other podcasts that I've listened to, like, I think I mentioned when we did the previous Patrons Pub night, you know, the Inn at the Edge of Greenwood does really good with soundscapes. You know, Kenneth Vigue in the chat of Fallout 76 podcast does really great with incorporating, you know, sound effects and music. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the team over at Kill Every Monster, of course, does really great with, like, sound effects and ambiance and scoring and stuff like that as well. So leaning more into the bardic aspect of the Bardic Paladin, you know, if I could change it and make it work, yeah, it'd be really cool to have, like, you know, ambiance tunes, or maybe, like, you know, like little minuets or scenes or something like that with, like, the different musical cues and the vibes going into the different questions, or adding in soundscapes or sound effects when we get to, say, like, the random encounter. So then it's like, Duncan is walking through the swamps and he's about to meet Reginald. And, you know, so you can hear the squishing mud. You can hear, like, the bullfrogs and just, like, the, you know, you feel like you're in the humid swamps of somewhere in the south. and then that would, you know, so you could feel more in it and, you know, be immersed, you know, believe in the verisimilitude of the random encounter. And it's not just the nervous sort of like, I'm this character and you're this character. But yeah, I guess if that was a thing to change, and if I could, you know, get the funding or the tools or whatever to do that in the future, you know, that is something that I suppose I could try.
Hire a Foley artist. Yeah.
Yeah, you need a Foley artist. I know a guy. Okay, so with the guests you have had, present company excluded, who do you think, in your opinion, were the top three NPCs in your mind? And it's not about popularity or anything like that. It's more about your personal taste.
I know Anson asked some sort of variation on this question about like, who's your favorite? And I was like, oh, they're like all my children and I can't choose between any of them. But I remember answering him at least with picking, you know, some episodes that have like stuck out with me and that have been cool. I know for sure in the game that I was running for work, I did deploy Gaznor, the sailor troll, in my actual game that I ran. So that was a really fun NPC to actually get to introduce into a game of Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife was in that game. She doesn't listen to the podcast, but she was like, had never heard of this character before. And then, of course, all my other coworkers, you know, hadn't heard the character either. So it was really cool for them to get to meet this troll with a wooden leg and, you know, the eye patch over and just hanging out in the tavern, and then getting the tale about like, oh, there's the treasure hidden in the well on the nearby pirate infested island. And so that was the way I kind of edited it for my purposes. So that was a really fun one that stuck out, you know, because I've had a good rapport with them, you know, on Discord and stuff like that. Getting to talk with Benjamin Huffman and Dane Fox McGraw, the boys from Dispel Magic, you know, when they did their meta episode of the Hexblood sibling fantasy game designers that were also Stonemouth podcasters. That was just a really a good bit of creative energy. Yeah. And I just had my episode on their podcast come out where we discussed the Hallow spell. So that was a lot of fun as well, too.
Okay, I'm gonna need a link to that as well, please.
Okay, yeah, we'll make sure we throw that in the show notes.
Excellent.
Here as well.
I'm so just building your show notes as we go.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and then just trying to think. You know, and then this obviously recency bias, I think, is what Super Geek Mike said. But, you know, his episode was also really fun to do, too, just because, you know, we made this awesome character and he was super excited by the whole process. And then I'll also go in and throw in Legal Kimchi's Alex, Legal Kimchi's episode, where we invented a whole new species of mimics, you know, the metal mimics, the armor.
Yeah.
Mimics. So that was a really cool episode to get to do some world building.
I loved that one because mimics are near and dear to my heart. So the fact that y'all built on that made me super happy, because Legal Kimchi is amazing. Absolutely wonderful. I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like going back to the, you know, the old episodes and, you know, that the simple ones that were just with friends. You know, Anson's already had a couple of episodes on with NPCs, and, you know, getting to listen to the Aerith Defarinen episode is also a treat as well. So yeah, you know, I love them all. So it's nice to go back down memory lane.
Excellent.
We're getting down to our last three here, and we're kind of leaving the world of the podcast a little bit, so entering more of Kurt's world. So when you start writing your own characters or NPCs, Kurt, what do you start with? Do you roll the same tables that you do with your guests, or do you have your own slightly different process, or how does that look like?
Oh, like when I'm running games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going into a game, I might do... Like, I think, like, oh, what's this shop? And well, now that the podcast exists, yeah, I might use some of the tables to generate ancestries or species or races or whatever the terminology they're using. But,
right.
You know, I might use that as a starting off point to invent characters. I know when I was running the game for work and I had to invent different characters from some of the different factions, I definitely went to the ancestry table from the podcast and would roll that randomly to figure out, like, okay, who's this character? And then I might use a random name generator, like, to kind of come up with names and then kind of get an idea of like who the character is. And then sometimes just collaboration with the players themselves, if it's in a backstory type setting in developing who they are. Like I know in the game that I was running, Anson was one of the faction leaders, and so he invented his faction leader's character, and so he and I got to discuss who this character is and what they're all about, what are their goals and everything like that. And then you also got to kind of invent your lieutenant as well. So if the player characters ever had to interact with your faction, they may not necessarily talk to you directly, since the faction leaders and the captains were kind of asynchronous as to the actual party themselves, then they could have an NPC that they could go to. And so you had a hand in inventing a Koshi, I think was the name of the kobold assistant of yours.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because you named the NPC after like a composer, right? Like a modern composer.
Now I'm on the hot seat. Oh.
I mean, I'm sure I could go into my notes and pull it up later. But yeah, I remember you invented like a little kobold lieutenant of the mallets. And that was, if the player characters had ever gone to Mallet's HQ, they probably would have talked to her.
The name doesn't sound familiar, but I trust you on that one. But yeah, so we're doing some external talking here, so I'm multitasking.
Don't worry, we'll cut it out if it's not interesting.
I'm being really distracting with badgering Anson with questions. So, hi, it's me. I'm the problem.
Love that album. That was the game that we're doing with the asynchronous factions is a really cool idea.
That was a Matt Colville as far as like, your friends who can't play D&D with you, have them run like some of the big important NPCs. So that was like a fun sub game I got to play with all these other people who obviously couldn't be in the game, but just getting to converse with them over social media and email and stuff like that really helped formulate as well these rich backstories and environments for the whole world that is the Cadence as part of Harmony and such. So Cadence has been hugely important as far as my home game has been concerned. You know, originally just my wife and I just discussing something on a road trip up to Oklahoma, and then starting to run this game, and then bringing in the asynchronous players and being like, well, who is this faction leader and what does it mean, and like what are the important things to you, and then talking to individual player characters and developing stories from there. So like my whole home game world is just much richer now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's see. I've got a couple here that are echoes from last time, but let's see if we have any updated second thoughts here. So we kind of mentioned this earlier. If you could have any member of the D&D community on the show, who would you have? Are you going to stick with Matt Colville for that one?
Sure. Him, James, and Tricasso. Yeah. I'd love to have KP on. I think he's more local now.
KP?
Yeah, KP.
Oh, KP will do it in a heartbeat.
Okay, I know he's been really busy. I know he's an expectant father and all these other things. So congrats to KP and fam. Yeah, I know he would be amazing to have on. Yeah, you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm still open to anyone cool wanting to be on the show. I think maybe over some other Deborah Ann Wall would be cool to have. I know she's probably busy. The other interesting one that I thought of the other day, Jonathan Raumi, you know, the guy who plays Jesus on The Chosen, was a voice actor on Fallout 4. He would be a fun one to have. Or, I'm reminded now, because I remember this was the thing that you posted on Twitter. It was like, name your five celebrities that you'd want to have on. And I remember Jonathan Raumi is on that list. But I think I also said like Henry Cavill. I think Henry Cavill would be cool to have, just because I know he's a huge Witcher and Warhammer 40K nerd, that I feel like if he's not already playing Dungeons and Dragons, surely someone has tried to wrangle him into a game somewhere.
Oh, he's got to be. I cannot believe that anybody who is as big of a nerd as he is not already into tabletop role-playing games. And in my heart of hearts, he is a D&D nerd.
Or he's playing the Warhammer tabletop role.
I could see that, yeah. Yeah, I could see Warhammer.
Think about the Imperial and the Undying Emperor or whatever.
There's so much Warhammer lore. I could see him just diving into it.
And on that note, probably some of the other Dungeons and Daddies crew. So like Will Campos, Matt Arnold, Freddie Wong, you know, any of them. Maybe even Anthony Birch. Beth May was really fun to have on as an episode too. So.
Yeah.
And part two of my question is, if you could have any person who is not a traditional member of the D&D community on your show, who would you have?
Yeah, so that probably gravitates back to like the Jonathan Raume, because as far as I can tell, maybe not explicitly involved in that realm. I'm just trying to think of anyone else from my circles or channels. I mean, like I said, I'm happy to interview anyone who wants to be on the show, and you're not involved in D&D currently, but you'd like to be and you want a small slice of that. Well, you take your 15 minutes of fame with me and live out that fantasy. If you
want. What about Mrs. C? Is she, I think I've asked you last time too, is she interested in ever being interviewed?
No, she knows that this is my hobby and that I love doing this, but you know, she's like, dear, I have to listen to you talk all the time. I don't listen to the podcast. You already kind of like, you know, whenever a recording's done, she's like, hey, how'd it go? And then I'm like, oh, I talked to this person. We did this and this is this. And she's like, okay. Yeah. So she likes to, she supports me and she loves me.
Yeah.
And, our son's a little bit more manageable now. So it's not having to be like, oh, I can't believe you're leaving me to solo parent after I have to solo parent all day kind of a thing. but it's, she likes her anonymity and just, she likes to play it cool. Like, she loves playing D&D, so whenever we have an opportunity to play, she's all in. But I don't know if she wants to subject herself to the internet at large.
Fair enough.
I am going to jump back into your personal opinions as far as D&D goes and ask, what has been your favorite NPC that you've personally played? And what made them your favorite? What about them resonated with you?
Well, I know, like, my coworker Catherine Spittler and I, for our game that we were playing, we extensively together worked on these huge genealogies of NPC characters related to her character, not just, biologically, but even just like, because her character was from the Cadence, so she had so much connection to the setting of where we were playing. So she would be one to be like, well, if I wanted to do this, where would something like this be? And so then we'd have to collaborate and work like, okay, well, you would know this shopkeeper, and this shopkeeper specializes in this. So I think some of my favorite NPCs that I've developed sometimes have just been organically through maybe like writing back and forth or collective emails, with other guests and stuff like that. I think some of those instances where it's more of an opportunity where maybe they're like, oh, I know that this person exists, here's their name, but I don't know who they are. And then it's like, it gives me a chance to kind of like bounce back and forth and have someone to like react against in the story. I know I was commenting to Catherine the other day, I was like, oh, I was going back and reading some of the stories we wrote back and forth. And so towards the end of the campaign, they had made it to the mainland, they're traveling through the swamp, and she was on maternity leave, which was explained why she wasn't normally playing in the game. So we came up with, okay, we'll do a dialogue back and forth to explain why your character's away and come up with a really interesting scene. So using some of the Matt Colville MCDM retainer rules, she meets up with this band of orcs, half-orcs, and humans who've escaped the slaver colony that exists. And so she's speaking to one of the faction leaders. And I just remember the really poignant scene where she, she followed the dissonant orc gods, but because she had become enslaved, she like had become like agnostic or had abandoned all the gods because, oh, she had been betrayed. And so her character is this half-orc cleric coming into the space to meet with all these refugees and stuff. And so I had this really cool moment before like the whole short story ended, where she's watching her finishing up all her ministerial duties, and she's like drinking from a water skin and leaning up against a tree. And so Catherine's character comes over, oh, thank you so much for watching over. And then Dak was the name of the orc woman who was, went into this treatise about like, oh, the gods abandoned us, so then why should I care? And then she pulls out a holy symbol of the old evil orc goddess that she followed, and she's like, oh, if I could just crush this in my hand, and then that goddess would feel just a fraction of the pain that I would know. Then Catherine's, her character Rocco, was like, okay, well then do it. And so then I wrote like, okay, well, she calls the bluff. And so she squeezes as hard as she can until she can, because they're right there by the tree I thought of. She rounds on the tree. She starts punching the tree with the symbol in her hand. And every punch is accentuated with a grunt or some sort of swear word or something. And she keeps going harder and harder, and she keeps hitting it to the point where she, you know, they're snapping, like something breaks. And so then Rocco's character swoops in to grab the arm to like pull it away. And before she can like instinctively react to like maybe swing at her because she's in like a rage, I just have her like collapse into the arms of Rocco into like this like semi-fetalness because she's just letting all the anger out. And then Catherine in character, you know, delivers this very loving, impassioned words of comfort to her. And, you know, she uses her last cure wounds to heal her hand up, and the symbol, old symbol, falls into the mud and the muck and, you know, disappears forever. And so then that's kind of like a moment for that particular NPC to have a moment of like realizing that, oh, the gods do care, and especially some of those agents who serve them, you know, actually do care about people. And so why I now have this newfound respect for this player character coming into my life. Then I said, okay, well, she becomes your retainer because now you have to go track one of the other rebel faction leaders that's trying to meet up with the big bad that you're fighting currently in the swamp. And so then that was a cool way to introduce and have a story for that retainer. So unless the other players from the game listen and hear that story as to like what happened, or Catherine ever chooses to share those stories with some of her other coworkers. Otherwise, that's just a between her and me. And now I guess in a context, the wider audience now kind of knows that story. But I thought that was like a really cool moment in character, and just like other characters that I've had opportunities. I feel like, you know, there's every part of a NPC story still resonates with you, because if a player character is an extension of a person that is portraying them, then I guess to a degree it's the same thing with NPCs as well. Whether it's like, oh, I just saw a funny idea on a piece of media and I decided to parody them for a game, or it's just something you thought of that naturally reacts or comes into contact with a player in their everyday sort of life.
That's a deep backstory for an NPC, or a deep moment for just an NPC. That's really cool.
That was beautiful. Just straight up, that was the crisis of faith followed by the reassurance and comfort, and the realization that brought is just beautiful storytelling. Well done.
Well, between her and my other good friend Kiki and Joseph Anthony and you know, others, Elizabeth is Horsley as well, really helped to all shape my orc pantheon a lot, and you know, for the cooler and the better. So you know, before Wizards made their official change of like, orcs and goblinoids have like a Feywild sort of origin, I just had naturally kind of come to that conclusion of my own. And then, you know, through the, you know, every setting's got to have some sort of apocalyptic war between the gods, and it's like, oh, that's where the fracture happened with the orc pantheon. And you know, so there is one that managed to stay true and form like this new family and stuff like that, but then all the old ones are the ones that went bad and stuff like that. Or that, you know, that orcs forgot like what it was they truly represented, and they only know what new evils they sort of embody.
I love that you took orcs out of the typical role of chaotic and evil and all that sort of stuff, and gave them a rich, textured pantheon. Because when you come down to it, a lot of cultures and societies have been shaped by their religion. So that metamorphosis from following all evil gods really comes out beautifully. Mm-hmm. I have one last question for you, if I may. Okay. Because this question is not asked enough once you're an adult, and I feel it is very important, and you can learn a lot from a person by it. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite dinosaur?
Well, how very apt of you to ask that, because that's what my son really likes. You know, he likes dinosaurs and
yes!
And all that. So that's you know, that's my headspace that I live in most days with him. And you know, he's just wonderful and great. But yeah, favorite dinosaur. Like probably just like a chill dinosaur. So I mean, tall. So it's like easy answer would be like, oh, like a brontosaurus. But you know, Triceratops is cool. T-Rexes are cool, obviously, and stuff like that, but, you know, Jurassic Park and whatnot. I don't know. I mean, I guess probably like a Triceratops is pretty cool because it's like they're good offense and defense as well, and they just want to like chill and not hurt anyone and stuff like that.
Hi, this is Kurt, editing from the future, and I have to interject into this part of the podcast to just explain something. So it doesn't look like all of Anson's audio finished uploading. So when we get to the dinosaur question part, Katie asks him what kind of dinosaur he would want to be as well. But there's no audio. And so I'm going to be creatively cutting around things. But at about this point in the podcast is when Anson had to gracefully bow out. So I certainly want to thank Anson for taking the time to be with us for Patreon Pub Night 2 Electric Boogaloo. And, you know, hopefully we'll have him back on and hopefully there won't be any more technical issues. Just to offer up a quick explanation and back to the podcast.
Pterodactyls are too edgelord.
Yeah, don't you remember Jurassic Park 2? They had to like go through the whole... they had to go through like the whole pterodactyl aviary thing, and it was all like funny and spooky, and then they would just swoop through. So it's like, yeah, pterodactyls are terrifying. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's flying and aggressive. This is not a good combination.
Right, yeah. Take me back to the Triceratopses, where they're just like grazing in a field and they look majestic. Yeah.
My favorite is the Stegosaurus. And I still remember the Stegosaurus song from kindergarten. That's good stuff.
Yeah. I'm down to still talk. I know Mr. Anson said he was needing to pop out. And, you know, it could still be an opportunity for, you know, Katie to still ask her questions and give her suggestions, too. So by no means am I trying to cut us off short or anything like that. This is your patron's pub night. So, I mean... you know, people bounce and then some people stay at the bar longer, I guess.
I am one of those folks who will close a bar, so yeah.
Only good things about Anson from here on out.
Anson, it was lovely meeting you.
All right.
Night.
Cheers.
Bye.
All right.
Okay.
I was seeing here you had some, you know, some suggestions and announcements and oh, I see. It was announcements of new Patreon perks, and then you had, like, maybe some suggestions you wanted to kind of throw around or talk about other stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. If you don't mind.
I've still got drinks, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. Again, Starbucks Tumblr. So, I'm in for the long haul.
Okay.
So, you were asking about Patreon perks.
Yeah.
Patreon is actually one of my favorite websites that has come out because there are things that I love art. I love art. I am an actress at heart. I love it. I have absolutely no talent for dancing or illustrative art. And so I discovered Patreon and realized that while I can't do these things that I absolutely love, I can support the people who do. And so the idea of Patreon perks is exciting. I personally love just being able to support the person doing something they love, and that is awesome. But you asked about perks. The questionnaire asked about perks. So I had a couple ideas that I would love to bounce off you if you're interested.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay. The first one I called A Seat at the Table. And what this is essentially you pick two Patreons. This would be a higher tier because it requires more organization, more scheduling, all that kind of stuff. But you would pick maybe one or two of your high tier Patreons and schedule a game with maybe two or three of your guests playing the NPCs they created, and the Patreons get to do a one-shot with them as those characters.
Yeah, that's cool. Certainly, I know with the aristocratic level finally being unveiled at $10 a month, that's where it was like, oh, the tri-monthly game, so like once a quarter, if you're at that level, yeah, we'll try and, you know, get a game together and stuff like that to play and organize that as a one-shot deal over Demiplane, which is the service I'm most comfortable using at this point.
Oh, Demiplane is awesome. Like, yeah. I've poked around on it. I've never played Pathfinder, but I have poked around on Demiplane, and that is a solid resource. It's good. The second one.
Okay.
Stick figure portraits. Basically, say $2 tier, because it's not terribly involved. At the $2 tier, as a reward, you would get the joy of seeing a figure of the NPC on the most recent episode illustrated in stick figure format by yourself.
Oh, okay. It's like a very, very rough.
Oh, very rudimentary, very rough, rudimentary, absolutely no AI, because AI is not good. Mm-hmm. And just sort of a silly little fun addition that you can add to folks. And again, $2 tier, so it's not, more people can enjoy it. And stick figure, so it's not a huge burden on you to produce.
Okay. I mean, I could probably even... I mean, I have some rudimentary art skills, so I mean, I could always try and do a little more involved than just a stick figure, but okay, like, you know, if that's something that's more interesting to do, at least with every episode, especially if, you know, it's fresh in my mind, and it's something that I could easily put together, I'd have to go through retroactively for all those other episodes that maybe don't already have artwork involved.
That, or you could just do it from here out. Like, from one point on, I should say. Not from... Do it from this episode. I want stick figures of me and Anson.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, that might be something cool to do. I mean, yeah, especially as far as, like, more... something tangible to reward, because I feel like at this point it's like very sort of like I get inputs and then they get added to a table, and then it's like then you just have to listen to all the episodes and figure out like when are my inputs going to be used and stuff like that.
So the third idea I had, I called In a Sticky Situation. And that is that at the say $3 or $4 level and above, you get, when you sign up, you get a sticker of the show's logo. And the advantage of this is that not only do people get to display their love of the show, but they also have an opportunity for folks to ask them, hey, what's that about? And they get to tell folks about a podcast they love.
Okay.
When they asked.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stickers. Yeah. I mean, I know people love stickers. It's just, I didn't know how feasible it was, you know, to do manufacturing stuff. But then again, just down local where I live, I was able to find a local print shop and I made all those business cards for the podcast. So now that would be something easy to stick in with a bunch of stickers, I suppose. And then it's like, hey, here's some business cards and you can give them out or whatever to people.
If you need a recommendation, I've had stickers printed for both myself and D4, and I have a good company to work with. They're not too expensive. The stickers are great quality. The fulfillment time is really good.
Okay.
So
I would certainly love if there were stickers of the fan art that Sam Rusk made of Duncan.
So oh, that would be pretty great. Cool
sticker. I'd have to make sure it's cool with Sam, because I mean, I know it's like her art, and so I don't want it to just like me profit off her art or whatever that, you know, she made out of her goodness, because she was like, hey, I really like being on the show, and if you want me to do like a doodle of your character or whatever, I'll do it. So
it is so amazing when people lend their talents to what you're doing. The excitement you get when folks are so inspired by your work that they create something is amazing. It's such a cool feeling.
And I like seeing all the little Easter eggs that I got to tell her about, like from the various random encounter adventures he's been on. So you can see the deerskin loafers with the coins inside the shoes. You can see the wooden spoon in his belt loop for when he talked to Mrs. Lily in the Spoon of Justice. You can see the Kwando crossbow contraption on his wrist. And so those little Easter eggs that you're like, oh yeah, I remember that episode when he was on that random adventure. Yeah,
that's awesome. Okay, so I need to jump back because the final idea I had ties into ideas for new things to try.
Okay.
So I'm going to kind of jump around here.
Okay.
You asked about new things to try, potential ideas. My first one, which I have a feeling I've mentioned to you previously, is a battle royale, wherein previous guests play their NPCs and they fight against another group of NPCs, previous guests, or a monster created by the community. And that ties in to the idea I had, which is at the, say, $4 tier, because I believe that's currently the second highest.
Right.
The $4 tier allows folks to make suggestions for what the monster that they're facing should be. And the credit is given to the community for creating this monster, which kind of sets it apart from the reward at the $10 Patreon level, which allows you to add on to tables and be credited specifically if your suggestion comes up.
Well, with the $4, that's where you get to add suggestions to the random tables and NPC creations.
Yes. So $4 is just a general thank you to the community.
Okay.
$10 is thank you to this specific person.
Oh, I see. As far as the monster. So if you do, if you do it at $10, then the battle or the battle royale difference there at that level is like, instead of just, oh, you're part of the community who thought up of the monster, it's like Joe Schmo specifically thought of this monster, so thank you for being an aristocratic Patreon supporter.
Exactly, yes.
Ah, okay, that's cool. Okay.
Another idea I had was story specials, wherein instead of doing NPCs, you do a special event, just an episode every so often, where somebody comes on and guests and comes up with a potential story hook. And you would play an NPC that they hook after the first half. You know, they describe it and what the idea is and how you can carry it into your campaign and adjust it for your NPCs. And then they implement it with you playing a PC and being hooked into the adventure.
Okay. So definitely more of an extension on the side quest questions, where it's like more explicit world building going on and explaining, like, you know, the deeper ramifications of, like, well, why is it for this particular setting or set of circumstances why this is a thing? And then I'm playing an adventurer character who gives an example of being swept into the hook.
Exactly.
Okay. Because that makes me think of, like, of how Kill Every Monster does it with the monster, where they explain the monster, and then it's like a whole story thing where Aram gets to be player character, and then the guest is, like, the monster, and then, you know, they do, like, a combat thing between the two of them or a group of adventurers against the monster.
Right. And in this case, instead of it being the development and fighting of the monster, it's more about how you would set up a story to be dovetailed into a major campaign, you know, like a side quest.
So basically it becomes like episodes specially dedicated to just side quest.
Exactly.
You're kind of divorcing it apart from having it tied to a specific NPC, though that's probably part of it anyway. It's just more dedicated towards, like, okay, if this is the side quest we're wanting, what are the world circumstances going on to how we can build this in? So depending on whichever way you're going to come into it will allow you to whichever track you come in, okay, now we're on the story train for this side quest.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, okay, that actually does sound pretty cool. Give everybody, former guests or new guests, kind of an opportunity to try their chops of just like, all we're doing is side quest development, so they don't have to necessarily worry about all the ins and outs of a NPC character specifically.
Right.
Okay. All right, that's pretty cool.
And then my third suggestion is I called it a TTRPG good news brief. There is so much rage to engage content online. Mm-hmm. It would be absolutely amazing to hear somebody highlight the good things that are happening in the community. New products coming out, people doing charity stuff, things of that nature, things that bring joy and hope to the audience as opposed to the sad stuff that goes on. Mm-hmm. And that, again, just like maybe once a month, a 5-minute brief on, hey, here's what's happening that's really cool and happy and good.
Okay. Yeah, no, I like that's an easy like bonus episode to just sit down real quick, record locally, and then just kind of have it be stream of consciousness based on some cool thing I've seen in the hobby space or like some game I've had the opportunity to try or something like that. That's just a bit of positive good news, and to try and get people to check out the story or whatever is going on, maybe some charity initiative or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Those are all some great ideas. Yeah. Trying to figure out like what ones could easily be implemented or which would take a little bit of development and maybe how different levels would change just based on the interest. Because as of right now, no one's moved into the $10 level tier, which is understandable. Things take time to tweak. And we did just record our first Parlay at the Platter episode with Travis Frederick, Johnny Stanton IV, and Joshua Simons. So I've got to
get
that
group.
One. Yep. So we talked sports, athletics, and D&D. And that
That's
was
a
conversation.
Great group. Yep. I love it.
Yeah. So that one is one that's on the editing bay docket that I got to take care of. And that is what I've decided that $4 and $10 patrons will get access to early. And then I'll probably get like a month or so before I release it to the more general feed for everybody to take benefit of and take notice of.
Sure. Yeah. So, okay. I'm through my previously decided content.
Sure.
So let's see. What do I want to pick your brain on? What is your favorite question in getting to know somebody on your show?
I think probably, honestly, it's the passion question, because it's, it's really asking at a deeper truth of someone, because I know people I've listened to talk about like the nature of friendships and, just the news of reports out there that, people today, millennial age and younger and stuff like that, have a really hard time with forming authentic friendships in an age where everything is so instant gratification as well as instantaneous, and you have to subscribe to all my beliefs of the same opinion or else we can't be friends or in different tribes and stuff. So people are just genuinely, seemingly having harder times making friends. And that question is kind of like a question that you would get to ask in a deep friendship. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I thereby become their BFF forever, by asking that question or just having them one time on the podcast, but it really helps to tap into a deeper human truth about my guest. It's not just like some sort of like, okay, we do the format of the show and it's all fun and games and we don't take ourselves seriously, which, to a degree, we're all here to have fun and stuff like that. But at the same time, just reinforcing that like, hey, I see you as a person and I value the you that is you. And, I'm just curious to know what's something that you are passionate about. I may not agree with it. I may not have the same level of expertise or understanding, but just kind of understanding what makes you a unique human and what makes you happy about it is just an interesting question to ask and then hear someone's answer, because sometimes, you know, storytelling gets an often, you know, popular answer in that segment, but sometimes people have different ways of answering that question when you put it to them. And then sometimes people give you a completely different passion answer when it wasn't one that you were necessarily expecting, like Joshua Simon saying, like, I am a huge lover of college sports. And it was like, okay, well, that's interesting. You know, for someone in the, you know, D&D sphere, maybe that's not something that everyone necessarily is passionate about, or you being passionate about taking mental health seriously, or Ant being passionate about orchestration and music theory and music in general. You know, people have like different interests, or if I re-interviewed officially Travis Frederick, he might say, you know, like, oh, I'm really passionate about beer because of all the work that I've got to do with Rollertown Brewery and stuff like that.
Sure.
So yeah, I think that's a really deep question. It's a simple and a deep question at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, you now have an aristocratic patron.
Woo-hoo!
What would you like the legacy of this podcast to be?
That's a good one. You know, it's always good to have the question of memento mori in mind and, you know, realize your mortality. And, you know, my tomorrows are never guaranteed. And I'm thankful to God that I have, you know, just another day to live and to do good work in this world. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that the legacy of this podcast would be that, you know, here's someone trying to be an authentic human being that has fun and sees beauty and truth and goodness in the world, even if it's, you know, maybe through the lens of something that may not have a particular real world application or meaning, but that we can find it in those passions and those hobbies and these things that we love, because everything is a seed of truth and goodness in the world. So I would hope that, you know, not that I'm going to be the next Tolkien or anything like that, but that I just would hope that people would be like, you know, here was a guy that was trying to make a difference in his small way and make the community a positive place. And yeah, you know what, maybe everything he stood for on a personal basis I didn't agree with, but I respected the hell out of his integrity and what he stood for and what he was trying to bring out, not only in just himself, but he was trying to bring that out in other people as well, to make them realize, you know, that there's more to us than just the labels that we give ourselves or whatever.
That is an amazing answer. I love that answer. So are you a forever DM, or do you play as well?
I think I would say like 7/8 of the time I'm probably a forever DM, and then every now and then I get to be a player character in a game. It just, ever since, you know, 4th edition and getting my start with DMing and then the move into 5th edition, it just, maybe because of my natural proclivity with being inventive and creative with storytelling and gelling with people and their ideas and coming up with these scenarios, or just working off of like, okay, I've got A, B, and C. How do I make them work? And then somehow I'm able to do it. I don't know if, I mean, I feel like everyone should have that ability, unless people think, oh, I'm just magically gifted, or I've just crafted it over years of watching a lot of movies and playing a lot of video games or something like that. But I do enjoy world building, and with good friends comes those good conversations to enhance the world building of like, oh, well, if my character is a half-orc cleric who is a war priest, but my goddess is in the trickery domain, what does that mean? Oh, well, it must mean then that all the other domains, regardless of what your deity represents in 5th edition terms, it just means that you're a different order. So it's like the same thing as a Jesuit versus a Franciscan versus Dominican. Mm-hmm. And so you could still be a war cleric or, you know, war domain, but you serve, you know, a trickster goddess. But your level of war might mean something different as opposed to like the war god and the war domain.
Yeah.
So you kind of have like different ways of, you know, of flavoring things and coming about it from different ways.
I love that. Okay, nice.
Because you're a paladin, so if I were to place, you know, your character in my game, like, what kind of flavor of paladin are you, and what is the flavor of the deity you serve?
Right. I am playing, she used to be an Order of Knowledge, or on D4 specifically. Mm-hmm. Seisha, my PC, used to be an Order of Knowledge paladin who followed Ogma. And then she's an Asmar, and she discovered through a series of very unfortunate events that she is the daughter of Lara, who is the goddess of illusion and mists and all this kind of stuff. And Sasha, the character, had always viewed illusions as lies, which is antithetical to her belief in Ogma. And so she went through a massive crisis of faith, and she's, for reasons that you, I don't want to say because it's a major spoiler, she becomes a paladin of vengeance. So, and an inquisitive rogue. It's a whole thing. But for the record, paladin rogue is a nasty combination. It's interesting with the changes they made in 5e, where a paladin doesn't get their power from their devotion to a god. They get it from their devotion to an ideal. And it took me a little while to grasp that. And I like it, and I miss the paladin being faith powered.
Yeah. And that's how I run it in my game. So, yeah. You know, if I were to take Sasha and put her in my game, so it's like, okay, so you're an Asimar, and, you know, you serve a god of knowledge, and so then you belong to the biggest order that exists for that god, and so there might be, because I know with my gods in my game, I've had a time to develop, like, different terms for saints, because, you know, like in real world, religions in the world, you know, different faiths maybe have different terms for, like, you know, holy people that are involved in their faith. So as a Catholic, it's like, oh, well, I know Saint so-and-so, and Saint so-and-so started this order and this practice, and you can find their descendants of their religious sect, you know, walking the streets of the world and doing the will of God, you know, but through their particular flavor in charge and mission. So, you know, like, oh, okay, so a paladin who serves the goddess of knowledge and is the knowledge domain, okay, well, then you just belong to the biggest, most common order. But there may be other people who serve Ogma that might be, you know, the necromancy angle. And so they're like more, you know, the knowledge surrounding death and burial practices and taking, you know, the death domain kind of seriously in that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how, like, I might flavor it in my game, for example.
I love that you went that angle, because the paladin that trained her was a paladin of Jergal, who is one of the gods of death. He's the scribe of death in classic D&D canon. Well, he was the god of death overall, and then he got sick of it and just was like, I just want to record names. Just y'all do your thing, whatever. I don't care anymore. So it amuses me that you went death on that metaphor. Would that be a metaphor? Yeah.
Metaphor, yeah. Example I just randomly pulled out of the air.
Yeah, that thing. And you promise I graduated high school.
You were describing that character, and I immediately linked to the episode we did with Mike Bradford, and we made Aurelia the god of assassins, who was just, you know, the kid who Tim Allen Santa Claus, the original god of assassins, and then was like, well, I don't want to kill anyone, but we can kill dreams and ambitions. That's a different way that we'll do assassinations now. Assassinations of character, you know, that kind of angle.
I love that. Oh, I love that. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's a fun episode if you need to revisit through the back catalog, but that was Aurelia, the god of assassins.
Actually, that brings up another question.
Oh, yeah.
So, you have a lot of episodes at this point.
Over 100.
There's a lot of content for this show. If someone was new and they hadn't listened to an episode, which one would you recommend to them?
I mean, yeah, that's a really good question. It's like the one that's the most entertaining sounding, or where the guest was the most lively and they sounded good on the recording, or do I pick one that, like, real good world building was done?
I would say something that gives the listener a really good idea of what the show is and is engaging on your core concept.
Well, I would say, I mean, the very first episode, you know, I explicitly made that one to be a, this is the format of the show and this is what you can expect it to be. So mm-hmm. like just on a very safe rudimentary level, I can say, if you listen to the very first episode in season one, that's going to give you an idea of pretty much how every other episode is going to follow. And as you listen through season one, season two, it's like, okay, it's like finding a rhythm with the guests and certainly with the editing styles as well, mm-hmm. not being so choppy sounding. That was just my persistence again, coming out of blank tape with like, no, I have to cut out every breath and every and pause and filler word. And then it was
like, oh, there's so many.
Yep. The more recent of an episode you listen to, I think will honestly help, you know, give you an idea, maybe pick someone that you're familiar with, or maybe mm-hmm. someone that you're not familiar with. Someone that, you know, if you can read through the guest bio that I've made, and if something in there sparks an interest because in their answer they talk about like a NPC character that you're interested in, then it's like, okay, well maybe then give this one a try. So then there's at least a common ground, and then figuring out like, well, why did they pick this side quest, or why did they pick this NPC that I'm also interested in? Or, you know, if you're just looking for something convenient for your game, I know there's a number of blacksmith episodes we have, but all the blacksmiths are different from each other. No mm-hmm. one of our blacksmiths are ever exactly the same. A number of Rakshasa episodes, but all the Rakshasas that we made are all completely different from each other as well. Even lycanthropes that have been on the show, they're all different from each other. So mm-hmm. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, whether you want a practical answer, or it like, you know, who's a guest you're interested in listening to, or just like, what are you interested or needing for your game, your character backstory? It's like, mm-hmm. you know, I really want to shake things up. I want some sort of evil pair of Rakshasa twins that are somehow involved in my backstory. Okay, well, Adriana and Eleonora are now the two Rakshasa twins that are involved in your character's backstory.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love it. So you are a person of faith. And a lot of times folks have an issue reconciling a religious belief, whatever that belief may be, with gaming, mm-hmm. because there's still a little bit of a stigma to it mm-hmm. since the 80s. It's not nearly as bad anymore as a gamer from the 80s, but there's still a little hang up there. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how your belief has impacted what you do as a storyteller. Is it something that you just kind of tuck to the side in a compartmentalization sort of move? Or is it something that you have utilized to enrich your storytelling?
Oh, no, I marry the two. I mean, I follow the example of Tolkien, because we're both Catholics. Mm-hmm. You know, Tolkien talks about how The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings are Catholic works.
Yeah.
I remember first reading them, you know, when the Peter Jackson movies were first coming out. And so, you know,
Wait, you didn't have to read them in high school?
No, it wasn't required reading for me. But I remember junior high time is when the movies were coming out for me. And
yeah.
So seeing the first trailer, my dad, you know, in the movie theater telling me, oh, these movies are finally coming out. Okay, we're going to read these books. And so then I started reading them. And I clearly, vividly remember being at my grandparents' house and getting to the point where they're talking about Lembas bread. And to me, automatically, being someone in the faith, I was like, oh, that's the Eucharist.
Yep.
Like, that's, you know, that's the life-giving bread. And so then,
I straight up pictured a wafer when I read that. It was like a big, thick wafer in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, it was easy enough for me then once I found out, like, oh, Tolkien was Catholic. And then I started seeing more and more of the connections mm-hmm. built into the work, into the theme. And, you know, he doesn't do it in a way like I know often the joke is with his fellow writing colleague, C.S. Lewis, who came to faith later in life. That was like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, the internet joking, like, Tolkien is like, you know, I've invented my whole language and this whole mythos and this reality, and the Catholicism's baked into it, but I don't have to explicitly make an allegory or something. And then C.S. Lewis is like, if nobody knows that this lion Aslan is Jesus, then I'm going to cry or something like
right
that.
let me just spoon feed you this little bit of knowledge.
And so I did end up writing a piece for Altea, and you can find it in my spotlight section where I was inspired to try and write something for work and they weren't interested. But then one of my editor colleagues said, well, I have some pull with them if you want to, you know, hand it over to them. And then, you know, they paid me money, and it's one published actual thing I've ever written on a website. So I talked about Catholicism and Christianity and tabletop role-playing games and Dungeons and Dragons and all that. So I think it's a pretty good piece that stands on its own. I mean, I did have a professional writer go over it and, you know, even bring in scriptural stuff to kind of help back up some of the stuff I was talking about without citations and stuff like that. So yeah, so I took that Tolkien approach. And so the World of Harmony, which you listened to in the bonus episodes of the podcast, which when I was doing in between week stuff and was like, I need filler content. I know, I'll just go to my DM's notes and spill it all. So if you need something to play with, you've got something. But yeah, that's all, you know, that's all percolated based on my, you know, my faith and everything growing up. And so you can see it, all the obvious parallels of the Sator being the one god, which is like Eru Ilvatar from the Legendarium of Tolkien, and all the other major gods basically end up being like greater angels, and, you know, the whole, you know, Manichaean dichotomy and stuff like that, which comes into play. But yeah, like, you know, the Catholicism of my world is all subtly baked in there without being like too obvious on the head in people's faces and in a way that's going to turn them off. But like I talked about in the article that I wrote, you know, I did it and I would encourage that in such a way for people to do that it opens up those conversations, because if you look at the game, it's like the deities are things that people interact with all the time, but yet some of the people who play this game act as if like deities aren't real. And it's like, but you're in a game where they're real. So then maybe that can be a way to open up natural conversations. So, you know, from a Christian perspective, or, you know, maybe you're Jewish or you're Hindu or you're Buddhist or whatever, but you can use that as an opportunity to be like, hey, you know, we have this game where we are, you know, avatars, or we are saints or representatives that are serving the interests of our deity figures. But like, that's a part of me in real life. And, you know, I'm here to not be the end all be all representation of it that you may encounter in the world, because I'm an imperfect person that's striving and trying to live up to those ideals and continually grow and work on myself. But
aren't we all?
At least show you my walk on that journey and what it means to me and how important it is to me and what I want to share with my friends and family and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I love it. It's not terribly common to see people in the sphere, in the TTRPG sphere, who will acknowledge their faith. So that is something that I personally have a tremendous respect for, people who are willing to say, hey, this is who I am, this is what I believe here. I think that's an amazing thing to be able to do, especially with incorporating it into a game without being ham-fisted about it. That is what turns a lot of people off to religions, is that some folks try to shove it down their throats, and there's a natural, no, wait, hang on to that. So being able to incorporate that love and that belief into a fictional scenario where it allows people playing to open their mind to what living like that might be like, and then either choosing to do more research on an out-of-game level, or even just saying, yeah, that's not for me. I think opening that door is a marvelous thing. So I applaud you for that.
Thanks.
Your career has dovetailed beautifully with what you do. And I'm kind of curious if you have learned things from the professional world that have had a positive impact on your storytelling and podcasting.
Yeah, well, I mean, being a person who's on the phones and emails all day listening to people, and maybe it's the only time I'll ever get to interact with them, but it helps to reinforce that idea of like the person on the other end that I'm communicating with, whether it is through a electronic means or it's through a telephone means, you know, they are a person. And so I need to treat them with respect as such. And, you know, they have lives and stories that they've lived. And so I'm sure it all feeds into the subconscious of like when I'm trying to think of a person who exemplifies this particular role in society or what they've done or what kind of personality they're like, I might remember of like, oh yeah, there was that one sweet lady that I talked to who just would go on and on and on about the stuff we make and how much she loved it. And so that's like a kind of a person that I would want to stick in a game, or like, oh, this person called in and they were having a real tough time and they were having trouble reconciling something. And so I was able to step in and provide some of that care and compassion with helping them to resolve their issue, or just to provide some context as to, you know, maybe what they were confused about. So then by the end of the call or the email or whatever, they're like, oh, great, that answered my question. And now I no longer feel, you know, discouraged or whatever. So
that's awesome.
It all helps funnel into also being a better podcast host, I hope.
I think you're doing a good job. I mean, I'm a little biased, but I think you're doing good.
Thank you.
What is your favorite story element to implement in your games? If there was a trope, for instance, that just absolutely fuels your creativity, what would that be?
I mean, I really do like feeding off of, you know, the things that the players are interested in. And so if I can get them hooked or interested on an idea, then that gives me inspiration to think on it. I know with this cadence setting that I've alluded to, obviously with the combination of all the player characters versus the faction leaders, there's a lot of rich world building that I've done for that setting. And so if the players or whoever wanted to explore a deeper point or a place within the world, then we could find it and explore those areas.
Building on that, what element would you say is your strongest as a DM? What skill do you have that you think is most beneficial to your players?
I think it's definitely my willingness to put myself on the line and be a ham, so I'm not afraid to necessarily be goofy or vulnerable, which I think helps a lot, especially with someone who's not an actor or they're not comfortable speaking in character. Then they can know like, oh, well, Kurt's just being a big goof. Okay, well, if he can be a goof, then I suppose I can, you know, believe that I'm this knight and that I talk with the Arthurian accent. Sure, okay, I feel a little more comfortable doing that. And also just kind of like riffing on the ideas that people have, where maybe I'll ask some questions and I'm like, well, if this means that, then what about this? And then they're like, oh, maybe I didn't think about that. Or, oh, that sounds real cool. We should go with that.
Yeah.
So I think those are some of my biggest benefits there.
How much prep do you do before DMing?
Probably not enough, but also just the right amount, I guess.
I'm a big person. When I DM, I basically build a bullet point list of things that are important to the story that I need to hit at some point. And items, because I am terrible at coming up with items. But aside from that, I just fly by the seat of my pants. So based on what the players do, I build on that. I will work in the stuff I need them to know, but I give them a sandbox, essentially. Yeah. So I know that's not necessarily everybody's comfort point, but I have found if I overprep, I get lost in the details and lose touch with the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think. How's your drink?
Good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. You're about halfway. Let me see. I'm not going to admit how close to empty my tumbler is.
Well, I'm comfortable stopping whenever you are. I'm not going to force you to sit here and still drink.
No, I'm happy just hanging out. Like it's, I've got 20 minutes that I can stick around. Oh, chug. I'm so proud of you.
I did it. Good job, me.
I'm proud. Good job. So, do you... have you ever considered playing on stream?
I mean, if given the opportunity, if someone wanted me to be there, and if I had the okay from the family to invest in that sort of kind of thing, if it were on a more regular basis than just like a, oh, I'm going to just do a guest spot here or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, that would be cool and fun. I mean, might be an extra fun way to bring in income.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not exactly hurting for cash or anything like that. Clearly, this podcast is not my money grab attempt or anything.
It is a labor of love.
Yep. Hobby, which, with a capital H.
Yeah. Which is awesome because I don't think a lot of people understand the financial commitment that producing a podcast or a stream is. Especially if you're looking to with a stream, I don't have familiarity with developing a podcast. I just do streaming. And when you do a professional stream, when you're looking to pay people, It throws a huge difference into your budget.
Right.
Which makes me want to ask, what do you think of streamers as paid professionals?
I mean, you know, they're out there developing content and they're, you know, they're part of that interesting point in the hobby where it's like, okay, well, some people are turning this, you know, into livings and, you know, people should be paid fair and comfortable wages for their labor. So, I mean, if someone's okay, I suppose, with just doing it for the thrills and out of the goodness of their heart, more power to them. But you know, if someone's like, you know, hey, this is costing me a lot to be able to do, then, you know, I think you should pay them. You know, I think that would be the right thing to do. I know, you know, without it derailing into a whole, like, what is content creation? Should it all be, you know, monetized and, you know, rails of capitalism and whatever else? It's just like, you know, whatever's fair. And, you know, whatever is, you know, the right thing to do, that's what you should be doing. You shouldn't be exploiting or taking advantage of people just because you can, because that's not the right thing to do.
I love it. That makes me happy. All right. I got some random questions for you to give a little insight into who is Kurt.
Okay.
Would you rather hit every green light for the rest of your life or... get a genuine compliment from a stranger every day?
Oh, no, the genuine compliment from a stranger every day. I mean, I get enough of that now just in my job where people are thanking me for what I do and where I work and the people that I work with. So, I mean, that's already pretty much in line with what I do. And that genuine compliment from a stranger is just like, you know, the best part about doing what I do. You know, because I may never see them this side of heaven again.
Mm-hmm.
But just knowing that, like, hey, there was a moment where we shared in time and space and you paid me a generally, you know, nice compliment. You thanked me for something that I was able to, you know, do that was the right thing. So
yeah,
that means a lot to me.
I try to make a point any day where I leave the house. I try to make a point of complimenting a random person. Because it's such a simple little no effort thing to do on your part, but it can completely turn someone's day around. Mm-hmm. And having been the person who was having a abysmal day and somebody just walked past and said, oh, I like your shirt. That tiny little compliment, that tiny little nugget of happiness completely changed my outlook on that day. And so being able to give that to other people is an amazing thing. Despite the fact I'm constantly late for things, I would actually completely agree with you.
Yeah, and I think that kind of dovetails into a thing you care about as far as mental health. I know where on random Reddit threads or something like that where, you know, guys are talking about things and they're like, I still remember the one day in freshman seminar of whatever class, a girl told me, hey, your hair and beard look really good that day. And then like 5 years later, 10 years later, I still remember that compliment. And that's why I wear my hair and beard the way I do, because some woman complimented me nice and said I look good. And so then I decided to take investment in myself and, you know, maintain, you know, like a good, healthy appearance. So,
yeah,
you know, especially for men, like a good, I'm not saying like, you know, oh, everyone has to compliment men. That's not what I mean. But I mean,
guys
like
don't get compliments as often.
Yeah.
At least that in my experience, guys do not get complimented as often as women.
Yeah.
And I would imagine like non-binary and folks like that. I think women are more prone to compliments just because of the way society works.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's kind of like men getting flowers. I know several guys who actually really like getting flowers. It makes them feel cool and recognized and special.
Yeah.
But it's not something people think of doing.
Right.
Or baked goods. Everybody loves a good baked good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Oh, let's see. Oh, okay. This is a good one. Okay. Would you rather only be able to speak by singing or have Earth be hit by a devastating asteroid if you say the word tomato?
Hmm. Considering we're growing tomatoes, I feel like that would just be, you know, too premature of a world-ending event. So
yeah.
I guess if I had to go through life as if it was a musical, would not be so terrible.
I think it would actually be kind of fun.
Yeah?
Because, like, even I know there are folks who say, oh, I can't sing. But even if somebody doesn't think they can sing, if they mm-hmm. take joy in the action, that makes it enjoyable to be there for.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing people express themselves. It's an amazing thing to see somebody open themselves up and give insight to who they are. So anytime someone says, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, but they try it anyways, it mm-hmm. makes that effort just so much better. It blows me away. So yeah, I get that. I think that's all I got, though.
Okay.
Well,
are you ready to close out the pub, as it were?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I know it's taken a while to get us back in touch, and I know you're due.
I am the worst, and I apologize.
That's okay. Life happens. So, I just hope that I wasn't being too annoying as far as like.
No.
How's it going? And then crickets and be like, okay, so she doesn't, she's too, I'm too, it's too much. I need to like give her some space and not bother her.
I had a period of time for like the last 6 months where I was overwhelmed. I was trying to do a lot in the TTRPG space because I was job hunting. And so I committed to a bunch of stuff and kind of overwhelmed myself, and then I got a job and still had those commitments, and it was a lot. Recognizing your limitations is a thing, and I learned to do that recently. So I've actually, for the first time ever, I backed out of a show because as I told them, I cannot give this the dedication and focus that it deserves. You guys deserve better than what I'm giving, so I'm going to have to back out.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that are near and dear to my heart and important to me, and everything gets kind of put on a list, but ADHD, I forget that list. So it actually really helped and meant a lot that you kept reaching out. I'm glad we were able to do this, because again, I love your concept and your execution. So I love being able to support it. And whether that's through Patreon or being here and chatting with you, it means something. And I appreciate the fact that you continued to reach out and didn't just write it off. So thank you.
Oh, of course. You're welcome. Everyone's got to look out for each other. So
yeah.
Absolutely. No man is an island.
Right. Right. The whole concept of a support network. Everybody needs a support network. And whether that's someone you know intimately or someone that brings you happiness, it's something that's important. And this is something that has consistently brought me happiness. So it was really good getting to sit down. And Anson was wonderful. Such a lovely gentleman. So I'm really glad we got to do this.
Yeah. Well, we'll try and plan for another one of these. Hopefully, maybe in the future, we'll have even more Patreon members to add to the call or something like that. That might be fun to try and do, convince your friends.
Do like a party chat.
Yeah, party chat. Yeah. If it gets too wild and chaotic, we'll have to organize it somehow a little bit better. But at least when it's small and intimate like this, it can be definitely more one-on-one Q&A type things.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you know, honestly, that gives me another suggestion idea. A roundtable discussion with some of your guests. Just you kind of guiding a discussion among peers.
Which is what I think we're trying to do with the parlays at the platter, where I go through the guest list of people who have similar areas of expertise or passions and get them all together for a conversation around a particular area. So hopefully we'll be having the first one of those available on the Patreon for a little while before it goes public.
Yeah.
And just speaking of all the editing I have to do, I know there's supposed to be an episode that goes out this week, Wednesday, but I haven't even touched it yet. And then, you know, that panel episode. So there's a lot I got to do, and maybe I have to give myself a little grace and just let everyone know, like, hey, Wednesday, an episode is supposed to go out, but I need a little more time.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that life has come up. And this is a side hustle. This is something you do for love and fun. It's not something you're doing for a living. So it should not be, in my opinion, at the top of your priority list. And I get the impression it's not, which makes me really happy. I think you have, especially seeing you with your son, you have a good grasp on what is important and essential. So you do a good job balancing that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going through my Rolodex in my head of thinking like, okay, I need to alternate between like some, you know, maybe not name recognized people and then have more returning guests and then maybe cast my lure out to be like, oh, you big shot, maybe you would like to be on this podcast or not. So then there's a little bit of variety as well. So it's not all just like, I exhausted all my resources trying to get these cool people and now it's nothing or something.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's part of something that makes the show work so well is you don't just hit big names. You hit folks from all walks of the TTRPG sphere. And I think that adds a lot because you're adding perspective that folks may not have. One of the reasons I love running games for kids is because they come up with the wildest ideas that you would never in a million years think of. And getting to bounce off a kid for story is so much fun. I love it. It's those new perspectives, those different perspectives. They add so much wealth to any story. And you do a good job of covering that.
Thank you. All right. Well, are we ready to hit the stop record button and close out the tabs and, you know, let Randolph know we're heading on out and all that good stuff?
I think so. Yeah. I got to figure out how to. Oh, you hit buttons, right?
Yes. I'll hit buttons on my side. And...
I was like, I don't see anything here that allows me to stop.
So thank you everyone for indulging us in our second ever Patrons Pub Night, Electric Boogaloo, Voodoo, whatever we're going to name this episode. Who do voodoo, you do what? But yeah, thank you for joining us in this extended behind the scenes of the podcast and the people who help financially support me to make all of this possible. So thank you all again, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Rock on 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh! Psychic. 在乎